My name is Patrick O'Reilly, and tonight's presentation is part of the Commonwealth Club's August Big Solutions for Big Problems series. And I'm delighted beyond measure to introduce tonight's speakers, Peter Lewis and Arwen Lewis. Peter Lewis is a composer, songwriter, and guitarist, and a founding member of the seminal and incredibly influential San Francisco rock band Moby Grape. Arwen Lewis, Peter's daughter, is also a musician and composer-songwriter, and she has recently released a CD of recordings of classic Moby Grape compositions, and I believe that these will be available for sale after the presentation. Peter and Arwen Lewis will discuss how music, from the perspective of both the composer and the audience, has been used throughout history to escape from adversity. I'm a psychologist at Napa State Hospital, and my music group is incredibly powerful to the patients. Music is powerful. Peter and Arwen will also perform songs composed by Alexander Skip Spence and songs written by Peter and Arwen. So please, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Peter and Arwen Lewis.
Well, music as a means to overcome adversity. I think we all understand how when you get born, nobody's laughing, So you cry and you get fed. That's the first sound. I mean, it could be music to someone's ears. Some other people it might drive them crazy to hear that. So then you learn to speak. And that's a little less annoying or alarming. And then the singing thing and playing may be, singing for your dinner instead of crying for it. And so I think just in general, sound is the one tool we have to sort of spiritually connect ourselves, all having been born in different bodies. And that when I say spiritual, I mean, the soul kind of is our own, but our spirits kind of move through each other. And the dialogue that creates is kind of like what you're trying to capture in a song, some of it. And, there are all kinds of different songs. Me being a songwriter, I would, speak in terms of what kind of songs should you write or would somebody want to write in a situation. Sometimes the songwriter is, acting as a surrogate for everybody. And in the case of this first song that I wrote with Skip Spence, who was in Moby Grape, that was never released, and it will be soon released on an album I'm doing in Texas, it's already done, but hasn't been released. It will be in February. It's a song of escape where Skip in particular, as a member of the whole San Francisco rock scene, was a very important figure, having started with the Jefferson Airplane as their drummer and then really being a guitar player, at some point wanted his own band, and that's where Moby Grape showed up. And so he, I think he saw himself like a lot of us did in those days as kind of a, when you find yourself performing for Runaways, which was really what was going on in the ballroom scene and at Fillmore Auditorium. A lot of those musicians were not prepared for that because most of us just had played in clubs, and that's basically babysitting for people who drink, and that's a whole different experience than looking at a bunch of lost children out there that have taken LSD for the first time. So the music that kind of came out of all this is part of what you're going to hear tonight. But the idea was all these kids, they wanted to change. They wanted to escape from the past. And, in one way or another, you can run from it. You can let go of it, And a lot of the songs that you hear from those days, and you're going to hear a bunch of them next year because it's the 50th anniversary of it, were just really created in that context, like songs are not written in a vacuum. Somebody feels something and they say something and now you've got a song, which is the greatest feeling in the world is to sort of make something positive out of a situation that might be negative otherwise. And the opportunity to do that that I had, it was basically just really the result of timing and fate or whatever. But, you know, I was born in Hollywood. My mom was a movie actress, and I had enough of all that. And I wanted a different identity, and I came up here, and I got one. So it's true that, you know, you don't always just have to stay put. Sometimes you have to make a quantum choice here or there. But inevitably, I think that when you look back, those are the choices that you're going to be glad you made. And anyway, this first song is just about longing and how Skip was up here once, and he had sort of disintegrated mentally after a short period of time when he got confused about who he was. And I think that happened to a lot of us back then. Some of us were more visible, you know, it was more visible in some people than it was in others, you know. But I think with him, he just sort of took the mask off, and what you saw there was like this person that just took too many drugs and he was too smart for his own good. But his songs were just remarkable, and those are always going to be, or he's long gone now. He died not 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or no, 16 years ago now, you know, But you know, it's hard to sing this song because, you know, it makes you go back to that point in time when you remember all this. See, so, but it's a great one, and I'm going to try to do it for you here. I call it Sailing. He was on the docks and looking at all the beautiful ships out there in the sea, and, you know, he had nothing, and he was homeless. I think he saw a friend of ours, who I won't mention by name because that's name-dropping, but who had a boat by then, who had made a bunch of money in the music business, was rigging his yacht, you know. And Skip went up and said, "Hey, man, can I go with you?" And Skip had gotten so far down the road that the guy didn't even recognize him. And this is a song about that.
sailing
on a sailing ship, sailing all the blue. I wanna go sailing.
Thank you. This next one is also a sort of a song of escape, and you want to talk a little bit about it there?
Yeah. Well, this song, it's called, while I tune my guitar down to D, get into it, this song is called Just Like Jack, and it's a song that my dad wrote about Jack Kerouac, about relating to him. You know, Jack Kerouac wrote On the Road about traveling and kind of being a nomad and just going with whatever opportunity that was handed to him at the time and kind of hitchhiking around. And my dad wrote this song about wanting to be just like Jack, and it's called Just Like Jack.
It's also, Jack Kerouac to me was a guy that wasn't running from the past. You know, although it might have looked like that, he was letting the past go, you know. And sometimes, you know, it's like people just think they can, you know, like I remember that song that Jackson Brown wrote, Running on Empty, and I liked it, you know, but it was like, there ain't nowhere to run, man, you know. It's like, it'll chase you right down, you know, anyway, if it's the past, unless you let it go, you know. And nobody can become a brand new person. I think if anybody was trying to do that or writing about trying to do that, it was him. This is just what this is about here.
Like about a temporary escape. Right, like when you
it's permanent. It's like maybe he wrote a book that caught him. You know, his mistake was writing about it because, you know, everybody read it and then they said, "Here's your royalty check." You know, at some point I think he did stop. You know, he wasn't on the road anymore, so he had nothing more to say. He might have had something to say, but it was his whole thing was to document this, the idea of him not being comfortable all the time, but it being worthwhile to him to prove that somehow you could let go of the past and live every day and not be bored. You know, it's like Dylan was saying in his documentary, you know, people that are mad to live, mad to die, you know. And he just wanted to be one of those people. And, you know, I think we all, there's a little Jack Kerouac in everybody, so I wrote this song about it, you know.
Chicken in the barn or pigs in the yard, a reason I should stay, wishing death to all who brought me here. Walk down to the crossroads in the early morning gray, where nobody else could see my tear. I went the whistle blowing like an echo to my cries, ran across the open field, hoping that I might have the courage to end my weary life underneath them driving wheels. And there I lay upon that railroad, waiting for the end to come. Far away from every failure that kept me tied to the place where I came from. Up and saw a stranger coming down the line with the look of one who understands, like he'd been through every danger existence could provide as he traveled all across this land. He smiled and he shook my hand, said his name was Jack, and asked me where I might be bound. I couldn't think of what to tell him, except anywhere but back, and as the evening sun was going down, we shed the day with a baker's portion, with wine enough to drink our fill. Far away from crazy fortune, but the winds of change were with me still. So I took a ride to nowhere, like all the hobos do, running down that midnight train. And after light on that flat car for another day or two, trying just to ease my pain. No longer was I running from the future or the past, bound to keep on keeping on. Whether I reach that peaceful valley waits for me at last, or do I end up dying all alone? Don't wanna hear no angel crying. I don't care if the devil laughs. Just wanna keep riding down that railroad without ever looking back. Just like Jack.
Like Jack.
Oh, now we're going to do a blues song that I wrote. And I think, you know, blues music has always been used to kind of talk about something, some kind of issue somebody might have directly, instead of using something more metaphorical, like a song like Wayfaring Stranger, which is more like a spiritual hymn or something. But anyway, I was having a bad day and I wrote this song and made me feel better about
it. Well, it's about your life.
Right,
you know,
it's about my life and about the troubles I have. But I
we
mean,
live in Lompoc, right next to the penitentiary. You know, it's kind of a weird place where you can go to the market and not get a smile out of anybody, boy. I mean, it's like everybody either just got out of there or something, or they work at the Air Force Base. You know, so they're taking orders and they're not in a good mood. And but we live in a very nice neighborhood, but it's a little like the Stepwardwise thing, or it's like you don't really get much of an emotional response out of these people. Suddenly they see me with the hair. You know, and it's like, what's wrong with this guy? You know, so I haven't made one friend in 5 years, and then she moved in with us so we can practice more and so forth. And her life is that she goes to work as a waitress, you know, like down in Santa Barbara, and drives 65 miles each day to preface the song. You know, because sometimes you need to.
Well, it's true, yeah. And so I was, you know, I made that decision. I made
this
sacrifices
a blues song.
So I could play
yeah.
music. I did that so I could write this song. Anyway, here we go. Well, I'm at home, it's Saturday at 6 o'clock, hanging around to see if someone might call. The truth is I'm out of the way pretty far. Well, I guess my friends are happy where they are. And Lord, I got them, I got the Lompoc blues. My friends, they all asked me why I had to go, and they wondered why I want to learn what I know. But I cried to them, oh, I was blind and now I see something that was always inside of me. Lord, I got them, I got the Lompoc blues.
Penitentiary lights shine over me. 65 miles to work I drive each and every day just to keep me alive. And I guess it's a price now that I gotta pay to make those Lompoc blues.
Silly song. Oh, no. Now he's got his blues song to sing for.
Yeah, this is my blues song. You know, every band, well, not every band, but I don't know if you guys have seen that movie Spinal Tap, but there was a great part of it when one of the guy's wives starts trying to micromanage Spinal Tap after they're over here not doing that well. And, you know, she told me not to mention any names, but it kind of reminded me of Yoko, and they probably got that character, you know, thinking about Yoko Ono or something, and... So, you know, but every band has got one of those when they start on the slide, you know, girlfriend stuff, and they gotta stop that, you know, and start making some more money, you know. And in our band, there was this one, yeah, I'm not going to mention the name, but you get it when you hear the song anyway, but it's called Screwball.
Got your message the other day. Had no warning. Guess you're okay. Glad to hear it. Thank you for the call. Screwball, when you live long as we have, I guess you see it all. Screwball, now please excuse me for losing touch. Make me nervous when you talk too much. But them good times, still it makes me smile. Oh, wow. Just wondering when old Jerry's gonna find himself a new screwball. That's all. Now all you other players, forget your pride. Don't let her catch you swinging, either low or wide. Better to strike out looking than be guy that hits it off the wall. It's your call, but nobody for nothing's ever gonna get a hit off of that old screwball. That's right, I said nobody for nothing's ever gonna get a hit off of that old screwball. That's all.
Now he's going to get his other guitar out. So I recently did a song on my record, a record of old Moby Grape songs, and I'm singing lead on it. And this song is from that album. It's called If You Can't Learn From My Mistakes, which he wrote from a very long time ago from a heartache that he had, and little did he know would it evolve into such a that heartache would evolve into such a nice song. So something bad turned into something good. And also, on my record, John Sebastian from 11 Spoonful played on it. And so that unfortunate experience brought him to his favorite guitar player to play on a track with him. So, you know, sometimes good things happen from bad experiences. We used music to make it better.
Well, it's about bad love, you know. Yeah, just John Sebastian has had his share of bad love. It's it reminds me of that song by Eric Clapton, which is great. You know, I forget it exactly, but you know, no more bad love. You know, whatever that was. That was a good one. There's its own way of saying that. Very forceful, you know. This is more sing-songy, facetious. But there was a facetious thing in the 60s that I really missed, you know. When it got all serious on me, I don't know what to say about that, man. You know, it's like, it ain't nobody's fault, you know. So let's not get too serious, you know. But I would say that in the 60s, there was a lot of loneliness, you know, for one reason or another. And that loneliness can't be shared because it's like now you got one person drowning, now you got two, right? And a lot of relationships, at least mine, were sort of based on just being lonely. You know, I just wanted somebody to hang with when I wasn't playing music or something like that. And, you know, love is a two-way street. Anyhow, So some mistakes were made, and this is called "If You Can't Learn from My Mistakes," and because you know, like it wasn't just me, right? But you know, the idea of being able to figure it out in a song is great because that does enable you to sort of leave the past behind and not keep getting in the same jams, you know. So if you do some serious thinking about it, maybe or it just comes through. You don't sit on consciously and do it, you know. I just remember really my heart breaking and not knowing how else to get a response from my wife, you know, who was up with somebody else then. And so I wrote this song. I played it for her on the phone. Skip wrote a song about her, too, that she liked more than that. So it's like, I don't know what to say about the whole bunch of them at this point, you know, except that the 60s was, you know, just one of those special times in history where we were all trying to be characters in a Jack Kerouac novel, you know? I mean, mad to live, mad to die. You had to really get in the right mood, though. It's like, and it was hard to stay in that frame of mind where it doesn't matter what people do to your family or your career, you know, because it's cool, you know, because when you're, it's like hippies not supposed to care about that stuff, right? Free this, free that, you know, like I can dig it, you know, and you can't, you're goddamn it, you know, it's like, but, so you write some facetious tune, and that's kind of like what this is, you know. I do dig the fact that John Sebastian played on it because he's responsible for my not being an airline pilot. I went to Purdue University and to their professional pilots program, and I just, you know, suffered with that because I felt like I was going to kill myself and a lot of other people if I continued down that path. But it was my mother's wish that I didn't be a musician, you know, that I live up to expectations, as it were, and do something with my life, unquote. So, you know, I went to Purdue, and it's 2 years of flying in the middle of wintertime, you know, landing on icy runways sideways, you know, on these big old planes. I didn't know what the hell I was really doing. I wasn't one of the 7 best pilots in the U.S., but that's who got into this program. But my mom was Loretta Young, you know, so her boyfriend got me in there, you know, because it's like I could get in where somebody else should have been in that slot, you know, that really had the chops to fly jets, you know. I mean, I was fine with the puddle jumpers, you know, the little Cessnas, you know, I do loop-de-loops, whatever. But, you know, in the middle of winter on Chicago, O'Hare, you know, trying to land up there, you know, and those wind shears would drop you 100 feet right before the stall warning goes off. You know, you already have a heart attack, you know. And those guys were cool, you know, just, whew, you know, and I was like, my heart, boom, 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 boom. So, you know, when I avoided the draft because I signed up with the Air National Guard. It was a long story. Eventually, I got to go home. I was amazed, you know, but I got to the end of the line and I had been discharged because I signed up with the Air National Guard. I didn't quite finish at Purdue. So they made me an officer, but I didn't graduate. So they found out and then they pulled my service number up. So I had to go down. They said, well, if you sign up with us, you can avoid going in on the ground, which is what you want to do in Vietnam. So, but at the end of the line, I just had my toothbrush, you know. My knees were shaking. I was crying like a little girl, trying not to. All these other guys were, too. It was a shameless thing, man, that whole. But, you know, I was watching Forrest Gump again today, and that's kind of like, he went right in, you know. But it was a scary deal, you know. And I got to the end, and the staff sergeant, you know, he was accepting people right and left. If you could stand up without falling over, you were going, right? So, you know, you went through the physical, these guys, you know, I can't move my arm, you know, bang, you know, welcome to the United States Army, go stand on the curb and wait for your name to be called by alphabetical order and get in the proper bus next, you know, and I'm in this line. And I'm waiting for him to tell me that I got to go out and stand in the car. You're not going home. I drove my car down there, but you don't go home from the induction center. You get on a bus, you know. So when we got there, there was no buses. By the time you get to the end, all these buses are parked out there, see. So I knew that the military was, I went to military school, so I knew that military, you can't really trust the military because you're their property. They really feel like, you know. And so I got to the end, and instead of saying accepted, he said rejected. Now he said, sorry, next. And I said, hey, did you say, sir, rejected or accepted or rejected? He said, it says here that you've already been discharged. The United States military cannot be discharged twice. Next. So I grabbed my toothbrush. I went out on the street, you know. And I was crying like a little girl. And these guys were telling me, oh, you could serve your country in another way. I said, no, no, no. Tears of joy, man. You know, so I hopped in my car, turned on the radio, and the first song I hear on the way home is, hey, you know, hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for... And I would say, I'm going, you know. So I went and heard the Birds open for the Rolling Stones of the Long Beach Arena on an electric 12-string. I was hanging out at my mom's house. She'll let my hair grow. And she was put up with her for about 2 weeks. And then she came in there, and she sat down on my bed, took a look at the guitar. She didn't know what I was doing because she had her own little life, you know. And it was the idea was cut your hair or get out of my house, you know. So without even thinking, you know, I just packed my guitar up, got set in my car, turned, hey, Mr. J. You know, that was in my head. I couldn't get that song out of my head. I couldn't hear my mom's voice. I couldn't hear anybody but Bob Dylan, you know. And so 2 years later, I was in Moby Grape, you know. I brought our first album cover back to her house, you know, and showed it to her, you know, kind of, na-na-na-na-na, right? She said, that ain't, you just had that printed up to impress me. That's not real. And then she finally saw us on TV, and I said, oh, well, you want to come to dinner tomorrow night or something? You know, that's how it was around Hollywood, you know. If you were happening, you know, but if you ain't happening, you know, that's not, you can't do that. You can't be a guy that doesn't know how to make it or happen, you know, or be like, you know, somebody that puts on the act, everything's all right show for people. That's really your job. You have inherited this from me, and you're going to do it one way or the other. She didn't care if I did it with music or being a pilot. But I did it as a musician. Everything was okay as long as Moby Grape didn't fall down on the spot, which it finally did. And then it was back to the old dumb brother act, you know, where you sleep in the attic and go get a job at the... You know, and so my mom and I had this very rough relationship all through our lives, you know, and then finally I think it was about her father who left and was a musician. Wow. And she loved him. And I was him, you know, to her. I had left too. He left, now he did. So nobody understands me. I was the last guy. She drove everybody else off. See, being a movie star is hard. You know, people think that's great, man. I want to be one of those. Nah. Because you're lonely, see? You're you, and everybody else is not. You know, and it's just one of those things where you just feel like nobody gets it. Even your friend movie stars can't help you because they're in the same situation, you know? You know, it was amazing, really. I mean, it was a wonderful thing to hear him talking at dinner about making movies, because they talk about making books into scripts and making scripts into movies, and they really would. That was great, man. I got to watch some of that, you know. I mean, to watch them making a movie is great, you know, because they do these scenes and it's like, how can you do that twice? I mean, you know, the emotion, the energy. And they go, let's take one more. We got to get the light on her nose. We don't have the light on her nose. Now we got to do this again. Okay, you got ready? Miss Young, are you ready? And they do it. And the whole thing, they do it over again. And they wait and they time it sometimes until they just got the thing perfect. And then they tore the fucking roof off with their acting, you know. And at that point, I realized that I could never do this. Yeah, I could never be an actor, you know. And I asked my mom once, I said, well, what's it like? She says, well, she didn't really think about it, you know. I mean, it was kind of like a way to make money when she was a kid because they were poor, you know. Her father left and her mom brought her and her sisters out to L.A. and they ran a boarding house. And then there was the studio next door and they all got to go be extras. And my mom was very gregarious, so she'd go drag the director's pant leg and, you know, this pants, writing pants they used to wear. And, you know, if you want me to say something, I can. You know, I'm perfectly capable of acting. You know, and she'd do something for them, you know, because she had this little thing she'd do with her sisters called pretending to be grown-ups, where they did their, not an act, but a sort of a little, where they'd pretend to be each other or something like people they knew in the neighborhood. And my mother, whenever all her sisters were kind of, you know, like pretending to laugh and cry, my mother was really doing it. So that was when she was alive, when she was pretending to be someone else. So I just never could do that, you know. So, and I admired her for that. She asked me once, well, do you, when you see me acting, do you think about me as your mom or as an actress? And so I just want to stop talking and play this song because Armin's getting anxious, right? When I'm looking at the clock here, man, like we got four more songs, you know?
Great, so we should probably
so it's all about timing. I'm not doing this. I'm trying to entertain everybody, but maybe I'm not.
Well, you know, she used acting as an alternative to her sufferings, and you used
well, that, you, you do have to sort of be creative about all this. It's like, you know, I mean, you have your own life, and nobody really can. I mean, the truth is, my mother finally understood that nobody really can, you know, be you. You know, you want to be understood. Everybody, especially in those, when they made those movies, it was like they really got into each other, you know. They tore out the masks, and, you know, they had some resolution, and it was a happy ending. And, you know, that's how they thought. They really believed in all that, you know. They were the people everybody wanted to be like them, you know. They were supposed to be good examples. I mean, this was their job. And I was going for it. I mean, I still am going. I'm still a true believer in that, you know. And I think we're doing the best we can. I do. You know, I look around. I don't see people intentionally trying to be dishonest. I think they're just desperate, you know. Anyway, so with that, I will stop talking. And you ready?
First of all, I thought to turn away from you, and then you did the same for me. No one knows if clover leaves will always come in fours, but if you can't learn from my mistakes, honey, I can't learn from yours. You chose somebody else to give you back your pride before you gave the chance to me. And just as sure as rivers could not wind if it weren't for shores, if you can't hide for my mistakes, honey, I can't hide for yours. You leave the way you came, or do for one another like a carpet does for floor. But if you can't pay for my mistakes, honey, I can't pay for yours. If you can't pay for my mistakes, honey, I can't pay for yours. If you can't pay for my mistakes, honey, I can't pay for yours.
Well, the next song is about good love, and this is really one of the best, my favorite song of all time. It's called You Must Believe in Love, and it was written by a dear friend of mine, Sam Andrew from Big Brother and the Holding Company. And, you know, Sam is just one of those guys who was a channeler. You know, he could, you know, his history is that he was like an Air Force brat or been moved around a lot, and, you know, like a lot of people in the 60s wound up here, but really was a tremendous musician, the way he could move chords and say stuff that was simple, in a way that you had to take him seriously. There was a lot of great music up here in those days, you know, and this is just one of those songs. When I heard it, I thought, man, I would love to have heard Janis do this one, you know. And I guess it didn't get into the mix, or maybe it wasn't written in time, you know, who knows. But we did it at Sam's Memorial, and it's one of those things that, you know, it just touches me because it's good love. Well, and there's good love, too, you know. It's not all...
What he told you about, you know, about the general thing about the music in San Francisco was that the kids and like everybody was coming to the shows to be a part of something, and that like that you were on stage performing, but you weren't up there to be worshipped or anything. You were up there to play for the audience, and the audience was there to experience the music with the band. And I think that's kind of something that, you know, it's an alternative to feeling lonely or some type of adversity. And I think this song reflects that message, wouldn't you say?
Well, I would say it's a way of like believing in something, you know, right. Believing in something that it's true for everyone, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what people were really looking for. But they were all coming from different places, and you know, the idea that was so odious to the conservatives or something to me. You know, it just didn't seem right. I don't remember, I didn't think it was going to create that kind of response. But when it was just starting when we showed up here. So, to see the response it got, you know, the negative press, some of it, or, you know, how we were supposed to be rebellious. I don't think it was as much about rebellion as it was freedom, you know. And there's just, you know, the soul wants to be free, you know. And so this is a song about that. Two, one, two.
You must believe in love. You must believe in love. Love is a chance thing. You never know what it will bring. And your heart may wish for guarantees there are none. You must believe in love. Soft is the kiss that your lover brings, and it holds more questions than answer rings. And uncertainty lingers, but when all is said and done, you must believe in love.
Now love isn't science, mathematics, or physics, but chemistry does play a part. It can come in a minute, but you must keep believing in it. Don't use your head, you got to use your heart.
Stars light the nighttime sky. All we can do is wonder why. Uncertainty lingers, but when all is said and done, you must believe in love.
Thank you. Now love isn't science, mathematics, or physics, but chemistry does play a part. Love can come in a minute, but you must keep believing in it. Don't use your head, you got to use your heart.
Stars light the nighttime sky. All we can do is wonder why. Uncertainty lingers, but when all is said and done, you must believe in love. You must believe in love.
Yeah. Okay, one more song. So what do you want to do? He?
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
No, wrong key.
Well, one more song. This song is called He, and he wrote it.
This is a song, another song of revelation, you know. There was, for me at least, you know, the idea of coming from Hollywood, you know, I just wanted to be somebody besides a movie star's kid, you, my life, you know. To not live in somebody's shadow, you know, and it didn't matter, you know, if whatever it took, you know. I mean, being a musician, I was a musician from when I was 11 years old. So I just saw Rick Nelson once on TV and thought, I want to be that guy, you know, because he was really cool, you know, his hair and his band was like snapping and a popping. So, and I got to meet him, you know, which was, and he was nice to me. See, that's a lot. A lot has to do with whether these people are nice to you when you meet them. If they're not, you know, it changes your whole life, you know. Maybe become that guy that shot John Lennon or something. I always had the feeling, because I met John Lennon one time, and we spent the night in his house in Surrey, me and the bass player and Moby Grape, and we were going to his car to this gig. We played a private party for the Beatles when we went on tour in England, and we were going to his car, and this little girl came up and asked him for his autograph, and he said something like, ah, fuck yeah, or something like that. He just didn't want to be bothered. You know, he wanted to just be an artist. But I had a point in time when I was, you know, with my mom in New York, and there was these fans gathered around us at the train station. We had gotten off the train, and they wanted her autograph. She said, well, I don't sign my autograph when I'm, you know, with my family. And somebody pulled out a knife, and a cop got us out of there. But I never saw my mom refuse to sign another autograph. I always thought that, you know, that morning, that guy that shot John Lennon was there that morning and asked for his autograph, and he said the same thing to him that he said to the girl in England, you know, and then the guy waited with a gun and shot him, you know. I mean, I'm just saying that because it all fits together, not that it's really true. You know, nobody will ever know that, But I mean, this is a song of my revelation about letting go of the past, sort of. And it happened at Monterey Pop, you know, when we played there, and I got some LSD from David Crosby. But you know, it was like saying to me, "Okay, man, you know, this is your rite of passage. You know, you're in the club, but you got to be initiated, and this is the deal, you know." And he gave me the purple haze, which I split with Mosley, or I'd be dead. I mean, that stuff, I thought I was dead. You know, this is a song about that, right? You ready?
But he woke up and he wasn't.
I woke up staring at the sky, but I was really dead. I mean, I was dead. I mean, I know I died, but I was dead to Loretta Young's son, but I was alive to Peter Lewis and Moby Grape, you know? See, it can happen. I wouldn't advocate using that stuff every day, though. You know, especially now.
He said he found himself and gave away the things he called his own. He awoke Duncan told his friend things he'd seen in her but could not comprehend. And so, taken back by what he had just said, he cried, "Oh Lord, am I alive or dead?" Was shattered when he saw how everything's exactly as it seems. He then felt no further need to hold it peacefully. Within was proof indeed. And so he found himself upon to cop the score of all those games he tried to play and then ignore. Alone to search for someone else to passively agree. He then felt no further need to hold it peacefully. Within was proof indeed. And so he found himself upon to cop the score of all those games he tried to play and then ignore.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much for coming, folks.
Thank you, Pat, for having us.
And ladies and gentlemen, Peter and Arwen will be sticking around for a little bit. If anybody has any questions or comments, if you ever saw Moby Grape live and want to reminisce. And Arwen actually has a wonderful CD. I do have it, and she does have some available for sale. And I suspect she'll sign them for you, too, if you like. So thank you.
Thank you for that.